There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Hour number two on this Monday, and I'll remind y'all this hour like I did last hour. Still getting, and plenty of people over the weekend and a couple of people today already, getting their emails into Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com for this year's Locals Only Christmas. You know, this is the list I put out each year with locally made products. I mean, books and crafts. It could be artwork. It can be experiences just locally. So not just that it's a local business, but somebody locally making it. This is a chance to help highlight what those folks are doing. And also where this started like 10 years ago for me was just trying to find like some super cool Christmas gifts, right? Like that nobody else was going to give them. And be like, yeah, this is a so-and-so. They make it, you know, and this person makes it in Loxley, or this person at Dauphin Island makes this, or this person, you know, in Citronelle make it, whatever. This is how it started, and it's built and built and built, so I appreciate it. Don't text them in. Like I've told y'all before, we get thousands of texts, and it gets lost from show to show. So to send those in, what is the, and if you're the one who makes it or know the person that makes it, tell me what the thing is, the experience, the craft, the book, the movie, whatever. Send that to me, and then information about it and a link to where somebody can click through and get it. Now, I told you every year, this is how local we are. There are a couple, maybe several, maybe even more, that don't even have a website. You got to go to the house and ask for Miss Betty or whatever to get the thing, but they're cool. Those are okay, but give me as much information in the email as you can so I can get you on the Locals Only Christmas list. We should debut the first draft Wednesday or Thursday of this week, and it'll be on our website and our Facebook page. All right, without further ado, it's my buddy John Sharp from AL.com, also a participant in the College Pick'em Challenge. Hey, John.
Yeah. Hey, Sean, how's it going?
Ben, the only saving grace for me this week, two things. So, I mean, we all know what happened on Saturday. It was not good for my Crimson Tide, but
no,
I did move up in the rankings of College Pick'em somehow. And also, for some reason, they thought to put Alabama in the champion, in the playoffs. So, I'm in. Those two things may help for what happened Saturday afternoon.
I mean, I still kind of just scratch my head seeing where we're at in this college football world. When Alabama's going to Oklahoma and the winner is going to play the right to go to Bloomington, Indiana to play Indiana, the Hoosiers. It's just, it's unfathomable where we're at, and it's crazy. And my Hawkeyes, I'm an Iowa Hawkeye fan, as I've disclosed for years.
He's full disclosure.
Family roots from that area. But, yeah, they're playing Vanderbilt for the first time ever. I think it's awesome. But the Vandy fans are all upset because they're not in the college football playoff. They're like, oh, we got this horrible bowl game and means nothing. And that's kind of where we're at. It's like, you know, the Indianas and the Vanderbilts of this world. I don't know if there's some humbling that needs to be done. But Indiana's an outstanding team, and Vanderbilt is as well. So both are really good teams. Had great years. That Indiana Big Ten championship game was an entertaining game if you stayed up late for it, which I did, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Now, does Indiana, if they were to play Ohio State again, could they do that twice? I'm skeptical, but you know, we'll see. This is a different world, that's for sure. A lot of folks have said, you know, we should be just simply getting a Georgia Indiana national championship game, and the piece of media that looks the old way we used to do things and be like, that'd be a pretty good national championship game. So, But it's fun. It's interesting. Maybe James Madison becomes a national champion.
Mm-hmm.
You don't realize it.
Yeah, you put, yeah, there you go. That's your sleeper there. Go ahead and put your bet on that.
Yeah, Sun Belt all the way. Let's do it.
Yeah. All right, John, I already had stories stacked up to talk to you about, and we'll get to those. But kind of the breaking news piece here, you just did – this is why it's great to have journalists like you do this work for us, because you had to sit through a Mobile County Commission meeting, but it wasn't without news.
Right. There were some interesting items on the agenda, which is, you know, not every county commission meeting is like that from a news perspective. But this one had some good, just the fate of an expansion of the Chesting landfill was on the agenda. That's been reported on by TV and by us as well. That was decided today, which the county commission said no to that. And then there was also that issue of the protest policy inside Government Plaza, which has got some attention around Thanksgiving. That was back on the agenda. It was punted forward until the next
remind us, what would that say? Remind us, what's the question there?
Well, the big issues right now, trying to go through all the, you know, making sure it can withstand the First Amendment challenge potentially, but looking through that, it's a policy for inside Government Plaza in the atrium, and it's been discussed as, well, this is a public safety priority. We'll make sure people that come inside the building are protesting in a safe manner. That's not, you know, the potential might exist for hundreds of people showing up with signs and bullhorns and everything inside a Government Plaza. That's why they're doing this ordinance. It does not apply to the exterior of the building. It does not apply to the public right away on the sidewalks, Government Street in itself. Those are the areas where those No King protests have occurred. Mm-hmm. And that was of a concern in November. That has been addressed. That's not what this ordinance is about. So a lot of folks that showed up at the November meeting were not there today. I think those concerns have been, you know, quashed. So the issue is within Government Plaza. It's something that you talk to county officials. They say this is something we've needed for this building for decades. I mean, you know, this is a public safety issue we want to address. Now, however, there are a couple of protesters who show up almost every week to a Mobile City Council meeting.
Mm-hmm.
They got signs up. They got, you know, they don't make any, there's not really any noise that occurs, you know, chanting or anything like that, but it's not hard to miss them. And I think the idea is to kind of designate areas for this activity within the building itself, so it's not encroaching in the middle of the atrium and that sort of thing. So they're kind of looking through the language to make sure what they're doing is constitutionally correct. And they're taking their time on it. They're not trying to ram it through. And so it sounds like the next commission meeting, they'll bring this back up. But Government Plaza, it's in it itself, was the intrigue at the end of the meeting, which is what probably we want to talk about. And that
yeah.
was Commissioner Randall Dewitt basically saying, hey, the city hasn't paid the rent since June on for leasing their space in the building, and we're not happy about that.
Yeah.
And so that was the discussion. Apparently there was, unbeknownst to me, I guess, and others, but there was a increase in the rent that was applicable in the month of June, and it was a sizable amount. The prior amount of rent for the city to utilize Government Plaza for multiple stories within the building itself, they have all the administration buildings and municipal court. The prior amount was $125,000. What was approved in June was $237,000.
Let me stop for a second. Was that like a built-in increase, like already in the contract, or was that a new contract?
Well, that was, if it's a new contract or
an escalator.
Existing contract.
Yeah,
I'm not 100% sure on that. I mean, it's big, but the rent covers everything. It's all-encompassing. It's utilities, it's power, water, lights, everything. So that's all-encompassing rent. It's not just for leasing the facility,
okay.
and then
all
the
right.
city pays additional. So that involves all utility costs as well. So that goes up. The reason why, according to Commissioner Dewitt, is, hey, you know, everything's going up in price, you know,
mm-hmm.
utilities, water,
got that right.
name it. So that's the reason why they did that. However, apparently the last payment that the county received was $125,000, or the amount in monthly, whatever, I don't know if the city pays every 2 or 3 months in the rent at once, but they got a check. The county got a check in September for rent that was based on the prior amount. It was not based on the new amount that went in effect in June.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have, and according to Commissioner Dewitt, they have not received any check for the months of October, November, or December.
I mean, this would be embarrassing if they had to evict city government from the building.
Right, that's why Commissioner Dewitt and Commissioner Hudson both had very strong statements basically saying, you know, this is not appropriate, this is not okay. And apparently the frustration is that, according to the county officials, now we haven't heard back from the city side of the story yet. I've asked them to provide a statement. And I wasn't the only media there. There's TV as well, and I'm sure they'll have coverage on that this evening. But what, you know, the argument is, well, we didn't hear anything back. We approached the city's legal staff. We have not heard back from them. And that's part of the frustration. Our attorney's trying to get a hold of the city attorney. And we both asked Commissioner Dewitt, it's kind of like, well, y'all are in the same building. And in effect, on the 10th floor, you have the commissioners on one side and the city administration on the other. Somebody could walk over there and knock on the door and have that conversation. But apparently those conversations have not occurred. And that's where we're at. You could see the frustration. And my question then for Commissioner Dewitt was, well, it seems like, and again, there was some frustration over the handling of this landfill expansion, city landfill and the county. It's a very complicated intergovernmental thing, but you could sense a little bit of tension there between the city, you know, between the county commissioners and the city on that one. I asked him, I said, well, you know, what's going on here? I mean, well, you know, is there some sort of overall indigestion, your relationship icy right now with the city? I mean, we got a new administration in office. You know, I know there's a little bit of grace period when you get a new mayor in office. So what's going on? And it came down to this, and you won't be surprised, but it has to do with the SSUT tax, the internet sales tax distribution issue that has the city of Tuscaloosa has a lawsuit right now against the Department of Revenue. Senator Greg Albritton came out last week with some strong statements talking about the potential of holding up contracts if this lawsuit continues going forward. Well, the city of Mobile, if it hasn't officially yet, it seems to be imminent that they may be joining in on that lawsuit. And so there's a lot of frustration from the county officials in the state, probably more than we've ever seen, directed towards some of these big cities, because they're concerned that this tax distribution formula for the internet sales tax could potentially be the law that was approved about a decade ago could be blown up through the legal process. And they're content and happy with the current system. It's an 8% flat sales tax rate on internet sales, while the cities are upset because they feel like they're being shortchanged through the a complicated distribution formula. They don't believe they're not getting enough money back. For instance, Tuscaloosa says, you know, they lost out on about $14 million a year through the internet sales tax, which they otherwise would get through if internet sales were taxed at a conventional sales tax rate that, you know, you and I would go to the mall and buy a stuffed animal or whatever for Christmas. We would pay Mobile's 10% tax. If we bought it online, it'd be an 8% tax with a smaller amount going back to the city. So that's
right.
Where
that's the key. It's not
from.
Just the 10 versus 8. It's how much of the 8 comes back to the municipality and how much of it also gets spread out. You know, talking about this, the idea that the money all goes to the state and then the state reimbursed based on population. And I don't know if everybody's the same, but maybe there's an argument to be made. One city spends more money in, you know, online tax than another just because the people are there, right? I mean, if John Sharpeville, you know, has higher receipts for online purchases and Sullivanville doesn't, but we have the same population, sounds like we're getting the same money back.
That's correct. But you know, the argument from the Big Ten mayors is we're the biggest of the cities. We have the most population. More people are on our internet buying away on Amazon or Walmart or wherever. And so, you know, we're the ones that are, you know, potentially that $14 million in Tuscaloosa, if you applied it to Mobile, say hypothetically it was $14 or $15 million, that's money that could otherwise go towards paying down the debt at the new Civic Center or, you know, building, repaving the roads for a year or something, you know, whatever it might be for a local governmental function. And so that's the frustration the cities are coming from, but the county is saying the counties behind the County Commission Association, a very powerful group. They represent all 67 counties in the state, and they're all almost, as far as I'm aware of, they're unified on their stance. Do not mess with this system. It works for us. It works for the state. We're bringing revenue back. And if we chop this up where we're doing every little jurisdiction in the state, every 460-some-odd municipalities, you're going to have confusion and the SSUT program goes away, and then we may not be getting any. We may not be getting the revenues at all back to the state. We have budget deficits, and who knows what else might happen. So, yes, that's a big issue that I think we're going to hear a lot about in the spring. Potentially, that should be something discussed by the candidates running for office in the spring as well, spring and summer.
Yeah, so, I do wonder if like the play would be because if it goes up through the Supreme Court, gets overturned, it's going to be that ruling. Even if you know what is Tuscaloosa, Mountain Brook, Tuscaloosa City Schools right now. If you're sitting out there on the sidelines, go well. If they make the decision, we'll benefit, but we don't have to put our foot out there right now. Right, and sign on to the lawsuit. We can like have our cake and eat it too, kind of thing.
Well, yeah, and all eyes are on Mobile. What Mobile's going to do? This is a big decision right off the bat for the new mayor's administration. Mm-hmm. We're all aware where former Mayor Sandy Stimson sat on this. He was very frustrated. He sided with Walt Maddox. Said it. You know, he called it one of the biggest threats to the city government going forward. Because of the potential loss revenue that you could otherwise get through taxing internet sales, similar to traditional brick and mortar sales, and so that's been his argument. You know, knowing where the retail landscape's headed in the future. I mean, are we going to have our shopping malls 10 years from now? The very debatable. I mean, things are people are more and more comfortable with shopping online, so. This is a big battle going forward. It is huge. It's something to keep an eye on. I mean, it boils down to how cities are gonna, and counties and even the state government's going to generate revenue to pay for our basic services or to pay off debt for facilities like a civic center. So, yeah, it's something to keep an eye on. But or pay the rent,
Yeah, there's that issue. I've been kind of goofed around here, not left us much time, but I've got to ask you about Gulf Shores and the speed limit, those kind of things for e-bikes. Can you give us kind of what's at question here in 2 minutes?
The best I can. There was a very robust meeting a week ago in Gulf Shores in which they talked about new regulations and restrictions on e-bikes, very popular apparently in the beach area right now in Gulf Shores, as well as Orange Beach, but more so in Gulf Shores right now. I think Orange Beach is going to be looking at an ordinance as well going forward. But the concern is the debate right now is whether or not this ordinance should restrict the speed at which these e-bikes travel. The city police department indicated potentially 10 miles per hour, or there was some interest in doing it that low. The dealers of e-bike dealers and those who lease them out at Gulf Shore said that's way too low. In Europe, the lowest standard is 15 miles per hour. And, that's really where at the very lowest we should be at. Now, I guess there's some concerns about these things zooming around the beach, some dangerous interactions between visitors and those that are 16 years old or 18 year it was a gamut of stories that was mentioned on during the council meeting on Monday last week, and I think their city is still taking some time to look at this ordinance before they vote anything in. I'd be surprised if it got voted on anytime within the next couple of weeks. Perhaps it might be, but they were taking a look at this because of the public safety concerns. They even talked about what they call a dismount zone. Mm-hmm. By the public beach area where it's very populated, so you don't have folks riding around these electronic bicycles potentially having dangerous interactions. And so that, so there's a whole bunch of issues with this that need to be hammered out.
Okay, you check those stories out at AL.com, or you want to reach out to John directly. How do they find you online?
The socials at JohnSharp99.
All right, good stuff, John. We'll talk soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, there goes John. We'll see you right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
checking out the text line here at 343-0106. Michael, on the same page, John Sharp. Yeah, maybe they could get that sales tax money could use to pay their rent. This is interesting. We'll see how long it goes on, but what happens? Do they, since June, not paying the rent to the county for the city offices that are going on inside the county building? They try to evict them? That's going to be tough because the mayor's office is, this is going to be interesting. So we'll watch where this goes. Yeah, and how much of this is based on this SSUT where Mobile may very well be one of the, you know, one of the plaintiffs in this case, along with Mountain Brook and Tuscaloosa City Schools. And the county says, no, 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 we're good with the way it is. Maybe we'd try to get this really broken down here in the next couple of weeks. And kind of, what's at stake? If you do try to change, I mean, could the Alabama Supreme Court, I guess the only thing they could do is overturn it. Now, if they didn't, though, the legislative body could go through and change the law. Instead of just overturning it, they could go through and say, okay, well, we're going to make this change and make it, you know, more equitable to this group or that group. I want to hear your thoughts on this when we get back. 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Yeah, programming note for the week two. On the road on Wednesday, going to see my friends at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry with a preview. Here's my friend Anna. Hey, Anna.
How you doing?
Doing good. I know this week, you know, this last week and then Saturday must have been big because even people like me are waking up to, oh, yeah, it's time to do Christmas shopping. Must have been busy.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, we had like a rush of people all come through at once, and then it was just steadily. There was one or two people constantly in here on Saturday. So we're open Saturdays now through Christmas up from 9 till 2.
Okay, so gift ideas here, and y'all are, and people are going to be able to see these in person when they come see us on Wednesday. If not, y'all can get out there beforehand. Popular, like, give people ideas. You're like, I don't know what to get for, you know, number 5 through, you know, 12 on my Christmas list. Give me some ideas.
Well, you can't go wrong with the 2025 American Silver Eagle. It's been a tradition for many years, people getting a Silver Eagle since the 80s for grandkids or somebody they know. You can also get the Christmas rounds and bars. They're engravable, so you can personalize those. The open nail knives is a great idea. There's collectible money. There's pop culture coins. You're talking about, like, Batman. We still have Batarangs in the case. There's all kinds of different things you can go with besides, you know, jewelry or collectible coins here at the shop.
Also, a great, I got an update from Ron, said you got the supply in on Open L knives.
Yep, we got restocked on Open L knives, and the Christmas round shipment is supposed to be here tomorrow. Knock on wood. I checked it.
Okay. Well, we will see those on Wednesday. So y'all will be doing the show live from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Plus, Ron's got this idea we're going to be guessing the number of pennies here? What? And I'm going to be responsible for counting them? How's this happening?
Yes.
How did I sign on for this? What did I do?
Traditionally, we do a Christmas raffle where you pull the hat out of the names out mm-hmm. of the hat. Mm-hmm. Well, this year, we're doing something different. Instead of putting their names in, they are guessing how many pennies are in the drawer, and the closest three people to guess those pennies, how many pennies are in those drawers, because we don't know yet. You have to count them with Ron Wednesday. They win a prize. You get a chance to win a 1/10 ounce of gold for the first prize. Second prize was 1 gram of platinum, and third prize was 1 ounce of fine silver. And there's, you don't have to buy or sell anything. You can just stop in and put your name into the drawing.
Good stuff. Tell folks so they know for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday how to get you, where they find you in person.
We're 2204 Government Street in Midtown Mobile. Or you can find us on Facebook, our website, mobilebaycoins.com, or you can give us a call. Phone number at the shop is 251-725-1590.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you.
All right. We'll all see you on Wednesday at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. All right. Some text here. Let me catch up with these. Joel in Somerdale says, Alabama Power has been blanking. See, I can edit on the fly. I'm good like that. It's been blanking on everyone south of the steam plant. Bottom line, and how they're not being made to move that blank out of the area is beyond me. They've got deep pockets, and they're paying people off to back the hell off is the bottom line, Sean. T-Bone suggests maybe we call this competition. And if y'all didn't catch it earlier, we started talking about it as, you know, imagine that it rained and there's sewage overflows, right? Nothing new, but we could do a thing each year, like, you know, like a college football challenge, or what we do it for the, like T-Bone said, the most voluminous polluter. You have to make it per capita, make it fair, right? The size of the utility, number of people served, that kind of thing. And then do the ranking through how much, we just go back through the news stories, keep up with what volume has been, and not all of them report. So Mons gets a lot of grief too. But they're bound to report their overflows. Other utilities don't. Some do, some don't. So we'd have to dig into that and figure out. We'd have to look at that. We'd have to Google that and see how much is out there and then like have a competition. Then at the end of the year, say, hey, here's a utility that's polluted the most. Jason said, I'm looking forward to seeing an officer pull over a driverless car and how that's handled. I have no idea. What does anybody know that? Like, thank you, Jason, for putting that in my brain. I have not ever thought about that. If one of those driverless cars, if you didn't hear the story earlier, there's the feds are getting into it, but so is the city of Austin, where they have Waymo, like the driverless taxi thing. And they're saying that these Waymo vehicles are not stopping for school buses, they're going around. So driverless, imagine that too for a second. You're in the Waymo. So you're not in control. I don't think there's like some emergency brake you can pull as the human in there. And you're coming up to a school bus and here comes, you know, Jane and Timmy and everybody off the school bus. And the Waymo vehicle is going around the school bus that has stopped offloading kids. Now Waymo came out, you can look at the story, I'll put this up on the X or the Twitter feed so you read through it. And Waymo's saying, well, we're correcting the software. We're sorry about that in so many words. And we're correcting the software. And then what's the next thing we don't even know about? So that's up. Okay, I just linked it up. You can look at the story over at FM Talk 106.5 on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, same place. So but Jason, I don't know what happens. Does somebody know, like, if a driverless vehicle is doing something needs to be pulled over to, what do you do? I guess they could call the company and stop the vehicle. I don't know. And does the vehicle know to pull over to the next safest place, or does it just all of a sudden stop in the road? B-Dark says, I need a picture of the penny jar. Do I have to go down? Yeah, you have to come down and look at the penny jar at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. How I got roped into doing the counting, I'm not exactly sure. It's going to be the show will be maybe truncated on Wednesday as I'm counting pennies and doing a radio show. Let's see. Jason says, am I responsible for what my car does? Let's ask the sheriff tomorrow. Jason, well played. Thank you. Jason now gets a job for doing promos here at FM Talk 106.5 because, yes, Sheriff Paul Birch will be on with us tomorrow at noon here on Midday Mobile. So thank you. Jason just wrote the promo for us. I appreciate that. So we'll find out. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, we don't have Waymo and stuff here, but if you have the driverless vehicle, and you get the police say we got to pull it over, what does it do? I'm sure this is written up and there's somebody out there I'm ignorant to it, so I do not know. Also, I didn't get a chance to talk to John. We had so many stories, and with this news breaking about the city of Mobile not paying rent for they paid in June, so July, August, September, October. So like 4 or 5 months of not paying rent to the county for city use of the county building. That kind of took a lot of the time. But I did want to talk to him more about the Mardi Gras service, but you know, we can do it here. Here's the story. It says Amtrak's Mardi Gras service is off to a booming start. I said they're killing it, man. It's a very sick joke. I'm sorry. Amtrak's Mardi Gras service is coming is off to a booming start, drawing more than 46,000 passengers in its first 90 days and far outpacing projections, according to officials gathered Friday at the Southern Rail Commission's first meeting. Since Mobile to New Orleans route launched in August, the line is now on track, get that joke, to more than double Amtrak's initial 12-month estimate of 71,000 riders. So good. Now we just have to keep the cars from getting hit by it. Said ridership satisfaction is ranking among the highest in the Amtrak system nationwide. Yet despite the strong early performance, SRC members and local tourism leaders said they are willing or they're waiting on detailed data they consider essential to shaping the service's future. Now, I will say this. It's probably going to be more popular early, like anything, right? It's like whatever restaurant or something new in town, people like it. Like I said, I'm going to go on it eventually. I've been saying that for a while. I think for like the oh wow of it, it would be successful. You know, Jeff and I have had these back and forth discussions. And so in the, hey, let's go do this, like, you know, go over to New Orleans for the day or something like that, I think there's some market there. What I didn't know is would there be a day in, day out, business traveler, whatever, but it looks like these numbers are good. We'll come back to this. Also, go to your phone calls when we return at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile on FM Talk 1065, and it's time for a checkup. And a group of doctors and folks at Southern Cancer Center we've known for so many years, and it's always cool to have a new staff member there to talk to, Dr. Eric Roberts. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So I heard this. So I was talking, because every month we talk to somebody, and they said, oh, we've got somebody coming on. We've got this surgeon who is really, really great coming on. You get to meet him. So this is that month. So good. Good to meet you.
Thank you.
So, okay. So let's just do the normal stuff we all do here in the South. Where are you from?
Mobile.
Okay. Mobile. Yeah. So another one of us, Mobile boy. Let's talk about, of course, in the next question, where'd you go to school?
Went to St. Pius
for all right.
Elementary middle school, then went to McGill.
Yeah.
Graduated from McGill.
Go Jackets?
Go Yellow Jackets. Yeah. And then went to Auburn University, graduated from there in 2005. Probably upset half of the audience there.
Well, but the other half.
Happy.
Yeah, well, if we are the Auburn affiliate here, I'll keep my alma mater quiet at this point. And so, cool. So you do that, you go to school, but you come back here.
Come back home.
Everybody does that in your world when, you know, they don't always come back home.
Right. It's been a slow process getting back. Went to medical school in Florida, trained at the University of Florida. Towards the end of my training, my wife got pretty sick after our kids were born, was in the hospital for about a year. Life-altering experience at what I consider still kind of a young age. And so moved to Pensacola initially after that, my first job out of practice. And then I've been in Baldwin County now for almost the last 6 years.
All right. I'm just trying to think about all the stress that having friends of mine or physicians going through, coming out of med school, doing residency, all that. And then you have this. You have children and you have a wife that's sick. Man, that makes you grow up fast.
It makes you grow up fast. I don't know that I've completely grown up if you ask my wife, but we had twins that were about 22 months old, and she was a marathon runner and having some knee pain. And lo and behold, it ended up being a bone cancer, and had to have a big operation where she was in a wheelchair for over a year, was in the hospital for about 8 months getting chemotherapy.
How is that being a surgeon of your level and to know that somebody else is doing surgery, there's your why. How does that feel, man? Do you have to like step back or what do you do?
You absolutely have to step back. You look back on your upbringing and your faith. It puts you on the other side of that, that conversation where you're not the one in the white coat, and it gives you a new perspective. And it certainly, I think it has affected me and changed me for the positive, especially in my interaction with patients.
Because here you go through all this education and refining of your skill set, right, as a surgeon. But there's a thing, there couldn't have been a class probably that said, here's how you're going to feel when it's your wife that's getting surgery.
There's nothing more humbling than getting kicked in the gut.
So, I'm glad you've passed it, but it does give people a reason to understand that you know it beyond just the, you know, hey, I'm a great surgeon.
Absolutely.
It's like I'm a human being that understands where you're coming
Absolutely.
From.
Absolutely. We all are.
So were you like always thinking about medicine? Were you one of those, like, I had some friends when I was young, they're like, yeah, I'm going to go to med school. I'm like, we're ramping bikes right now. What?
Absolutely. I don't know why. My dad worked
You are one of those.
I am one of those. My dad worked at Mobile Gas. My mom was a Catholic school teacher. But I always, from as young as I can remember, I always said I want to be a doctor. I enjoyed going to the pediatrician's office. As odd as that sounds.
You're the guy. Okay.
I was that weird kid that I just... I love the idea of being the person that somebody came to when they were sick.
Okay, so we take the bigger world of being a physician. What leads you to surgery?
So when you get towards the end of medical school, you start doing rotations through all the different specialties. And my mind was made up that I wanted to do emergency medicine. I had some kids that I knew whose dads were surgeons, and they weren't around as much playing sports as my parents were. Mm-hmm. I wanted to coach my kids. I wanted to be able to take my son, you know, fishing or hunting, yeah, or take my daughter to the ballet. I wanted to be a dad. And every time a patient from the emergency department would go to the operating room, I was like, man, I wish I could follow that patient and see how things ended up. And then came across a surgeon named Karen Gill who made surgery fun. And it was,
wait a second, made surgery fun. Okay.
He just had such a personality that the patients loved him. He was always full of energy and
cool.
He would work, you know, 30 straight hours and he still had a smile on his face. And I was like, this can be done and you don't have to be a jerk while doing it.
Wow. What a great role model.
He was. He still is.
So what procedures do you offer with Southern Cancer Center? What are you doing?
So with Southern Cancer Center, I am a general surgeon. They are an oncology surgical office, but I am a general surgeon by trade. So skin cancers, hernias, gallbladders, appendicitis, hemorrhoids, breast cancer, kind of everything skin and its contents. We don't do any of the bone surgery. That's the orthopedic surgeons. But colon cancer, diverticulitis, we kind of cover.
Well, you do it. Okay.
We do a lot.
It was like de minimis when you started talking about it. Then I'm like, yeah, that's all, like almost everything.
It's a pretty broad-based practice. Medicine is becoming more and more specialized, mm-hmm, but general surgery is still one of those fields that has a very broad base.
So your motivations to join Southern Cancer Center, is that from?
So I've been in Baldwin County for almost 6 years now, and I've gotten to know their providers on a professional and a personal level. And coming from my background, my mom had breast cancer. She had some sisters who had breast cancer. We've all been affected by it. And our patients are affected by it. So I've gotten to interact with them quite a bit. And it is a group of physicians that truly are in it for the right reason. They're there for their patients. And you want to be part of a team that's like-minded and all pulling in the same direction. And when the opportunity came to join them, I jumped in with both feet.
So, I mean, there's some synergy to have. I mean, at Southern Cancer Center, right, you got the oncology department, and right, so all in the same place.
Absolutely. And it makes it easy when I can say, I'm going to set you, you know, I'm giving you some of the worst news of your life.
Yeah.
You have a breast cancer or a colon cancer, but I'm sending you to somebody who's part of a group that I trust enough that they've taken care of my mom or they've taken care of friends of mine. And to be able to be a part of that group and say, hey, I'm going to walk you across the hall and you're going to meet somebody who's going to help save your life. That's you can't turn that down.
No, it's pretty awesome to be able to say too, like, you know, I understand where you're coming from. Seriously, here's my story. And these are people that I know that treat family members. That's special.
It is. And it's a great opportunity.
It's a thing about being coming and bringing your talents back home. You know, you get that link, oh, yeah, that bond with people.
It's great being back.
You talk about that bad news and having to give people that. What can somebody expect if they come to see you? Like, what's that process like when, okay, now we need to talk to Dr. Yeah, Robertson?
So luckily for me, you know, I'm still seeing people, you know, for their hernia or for their gallbladder. Mm-hmm. And so that's not always a life altering.
Right. That hernia might feel like it before you, right, get your work done.
And so just because they're seeing me doesn't mean that we're going to be talking about cancer. And the vast majority of the time we're not. They're coming to see me. And my goal is to hopefully, you know, find health in them. It's easy for us to find disease. I think the harder part and the part that sometimes healthcare fails at is our goal is to find health for the patients. Mm-hmm. We're there to get you better. And I always tell every patient, the less medicines you're on and the less surgery you have, the better off you are. And I make a living off of operating and writing prescriptions.
It's good to hear that spirit. I mean, you know, that, and then maybe we're going to get more towards that where we get health to a point that it's not just a prescription. You know, I mean, there's things that, you know, obviously have to be done by a surgeon. Things have right. to be removed or fixed or, you know, but where everything's not going to just have to be, hey, you could make these choices and maybe not have to be on so many of these pills.
Yeah, if I can find a way to help a patient avoid an operation, that's why I'm here.
So it gives people a reason to trust what you're saying, Dr. Roberts. I appreciate that. If people want to come see you, you said Baldwin County, where are your
locations? Yes, I'm in Baldwin County. You can go to southerncancercenter.com. I have an office in Daphne and in Foley. We're serving the entire Baldwin County community, and I'm just glad to be a part of it.
Yeah, it was good to meet you, and I can't imagine our paths hadn't crossed before, but I'm sure they will.
I can't wait to see you again.
All right, good stuff. Dr. Eric Roberts with Southern Cancer Center right here on Midday Mobile.